You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
This week, our case takes us across the Atlantic Ocean to England in Nottinghamshire. Now, Nottingham is the biggest city in Nottinghamshire, a non-coastal landlocked county in central UK. This area of England is known as the East Midlands. One of Nottinghamshire's claim to fame is that its location of Sherwood Forest, home to the legendary Robin Hood. You know, the heroic outlaw who would steal from the rich and give to the poor. The town of Redhill is about 4 miles from the city of Nottingham, and it's where our case takes place. It's a small suburban town with a population of only about 2,000 people. Now, Redhill is part of the larger town of Arnold. There's a quiet cul-de-sac in Redhill called Georgia Drive, where the detached houses are close together, side by side. It's a nice neighborhood for a family, quiet and safe, with fields close by. 2011 and the Bartlam family of three lives on that Georgia Drive cul-de-sac in Redhill. Jacqueline Bryant Bartlam, who goes by Jackie, is the mom. She's 47 years old, divorced, and lives with her two sons, Daniel, who's 14, Dominic, who's 6. They also have a family dog, Meg. Jackie and her ex-husband, Adrian, divorced in 2005, shortly after Dominic was born. Jackie has custody of both boys, although Adrian is still involved and picks them up for outings from time to time. To give a little background, Jackie Bryant and Adrian got married when their older son Daniel was 3 years old. He's even in their wedding photo, cute little boy with a flower pinned to his chest, just like his dad. However, the following year, Jackie's family was struck by a terrible tragedy. When Daniel was only 4 years old, and before Dominic was even born, Jackie's younger sister Michelle and Michelle's son Mark were killed in a car accident by a drunk driver. Unfortunately, this wouldn't be the last tragedy in the family. In May 2008, 3 years after Jackie and Adrian's divorce, Jackie meets a new man named Simon Manners. They both work for the land registry, where Simon is a commercial manager. They hit it off and begin a serious relationship. Simon starts spending more and more time with Jackie and her two sons. It's not clear if at this point Simon is living full-time with Jackie and her boys in 2011, but either way, he's spending a lot of time in their house on Georgia Drive. In the early hours of April 25th, 2011, Easter Monday, which is a holiday in the UK, like the name suggests, it's the day after Easter Sunday. Simon is out of town for 2 weeks on a business trip, leaving just Jackie and her two boys home alone. And a little after 1 a.m. that Easter Monday, the neighbors on Georgia Drive are awoken from their sleep by terrible sounds, children screaming. The neighbors rush to their windows and run outside, only to see that the Bartlam's house is fully ablaze. Daniel, the older brother, is outside yelling and screaming for help. He's holding his 6-year-old brother Dominic in his arms, and Dominic is just wailing. Somehow, Daniel is also managing to hold their dog Meg, so this 14-year-old is saving the day. He's got a child in one arm, a dog in the other, and he's screaming for help. Houses on Georgia Drive, like I said, are all very tall and close together. Flames are shooting out from the right-hand bedroom of the Bartlam house upstairs. Neighbors immediately call 999, which is the British equivalent of 911, and firefighters arrive on the scene very quickly. The whole right side of the second floor of the house is burning. While the firefighters are inside fighting to contain the fire, Daniel is urgently telling the neighbors that a masked intruder was just inside the house and that he's afraid the man has hurt his mom, who's still inside. Daniel says something about a hammer and claims that the intruder fled out of a window while the house was on fire. Yes, Jackie's boys have made it out of the burning house, but Jackie is nowhere to be seen. The police arrive on Georgia Drive as well. While firefighters continue getting the fire under control and searching for Jackie, Daniel tells police that he saw the man in the house. He claims the intruder set the house on fire and might have hurt his mother. By this point, Daniel has calmed down enough that he's able to tell them what happened. Meanwhile, Jackie's parents, Daniel and Dominic's grandparents, get the middle of the night call that everyone dreads. They're told there's been a fire at their daughter's house, and they rush to the scene. They live close by, and by the time they arrive, the fire is still raging. Grandma Shirley, Grandpa Joff, see Daniel and Dominic outside. Younger brother Dominic is still crying, and Daniel tells his grandmother again he saw an intruder in the house, and he thinks the man hurt his mom. Grandma Shirley is begging and pleading with everyone for her daughter, Jackie, to be okay for someone to rescue her from the burning house. Can you imagine? You have the boys and the dog outside, but they're just looking around saying, "Mom is still inside the burning house. Please, go in and get her." However, Jackie couldn't be saved. When firefighters first went inside the house, they were shocked to find the body of a woman inside the right-hand upstairs bedroom. This was the bedroom that seemed to be the epicenter of the fire. They didn't immediately tell the family what they had found, but after about 3 hours, the authorities informed Jackie's parents. Jackie's body has been found. I think part of that is because they had to make sure it was really her. Danielle's grandparents take him back to their house and the police accompany them. Meanwhile, Dominic, the 6-year-old, and their dog are taken to Jackie's sister, Carol's house. The police are heavily involved from the very beginning because they know this is no ordinary fire. The firefighters and police found Jackie's body. They also found something else, a hammer. It was next to Jackie's burnt body. Now an investigation begins immediately, not just into the source of the fire, but into the identity of the so-called intruder who did this, the only eyewitness, Daniel. Police need to find out what happened inside the Bartlett home that night. They talk to Daniel, their only witness, at his grandparents' house. Daniel tells the police that he got up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom. While doing that, he claims he was confronted by the intruder inside their home. According to Daniel, the man was wearing a mask over his face. Different sources actually give slightly different accounts of what happens next, according to Daniel, but here's the general story. Apparently, Daniel saw a hammer lying on the floor, threw it at the intruder to scare him off. Then Daniel says he ran to his mother's bedroom where he found her on the floor with the bedroom burning. So according to Daniel, the attack had already happened by the time he woke up, and the fire had already started. According to the Daily Mail, Daniel says he panicked and fled, grabbing his little brother and their dog before escaping the house. So Daniel is essentially a hero in this version of events. He's the big brother who bravely rescued his younger sibling and the dog, getting them both out of the burning house. But Jackie's body is so burned so badly that it has to be identified through dental records. And this explains why it took the authorities 3 hours to confirm to the family that it was her. Because if she was burned that badly, they couldn't immediately say with certainty, yes, we found her. Almost immediately, a home office pathologist performs a post-mortem examination on Jackie's body. Incredibly, despite how badly her body is burned, medical examiners and forensic investigators are still able to determine her cause of death. It's not from the fire, not from the flames, not from smoke inhalation. Jackie was murdered. She was beaten to death, and her injuries are consistent with being attacked with a hammer. However, the pathologist comes up with some unexpected results. The exam reveals that Jackie was not murdered by the hammer that the firefighters and police found next to her body, the lump hammer that was placed near her bedroom window. Instead, her injuries are consistent with being savagely attacked by a different kind of hammer, a claw hammer. And this detail is critical, because it meant that someone left a false clue at the murder scene. Someone planted that hammer there. It wasn't actually the murder weapon. Authorities believe they have already found the real weapon. Once the fire is out, the police are able to search the entire house, and this includes Daniel's room, 14-year-old Hero's bedroom. And inside, law enforcement finds violent drawings, violent stories, violent posters all over the walls. And then they make a terrible discovery. Inside Daniel's room, hidden either in his closet or under his bed, they find a claw hammer and a bottle of cleaning fluid. Yes, cleaning fluid. So within just a few hours after the fire, after hearing Daniel's story and doing some initial investigating, the police decide Daniel needs to be taken in, so they arrest him, because at this point they are very suspicious. But the post-mortem confirms that Jackie was hit with a claw hammer 7 times. She was savagely beaten over and over again in the head, face, and jaw. And then there's the murder weapon hidden in Daniel's room. And then there's the fact that Daniel's story doesn't add up.
Wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Police quickly determine that Daniel's story about the masked intruder has inconsistencies in it. There are holes in it, and there are things that don't make sense when compared to the evidence in the other witness accounts, including perhaps the account of his own 6-year-old brother. So now the police start talking to everyone they can find who knows the family. They need to learn more about the family. family dynamic, Daniel himself, what was really going on in that house. One of the first people they talked to? Simon Manners, Jackie's boyfriend. A man who had been acting as a stepfather to Jackie's boy for the past couple of years. And Simon, he has a lot to say. Simon tells the police that he was out of town at the time of the fire. He first saw the story on the news about a house fire. And as soon as the news mentioned the name of their street, Georgia Drive, he knew. He feared that it was Jackie's house. And worse, he had a gut feeling that Daniel was responsible. From the very first moment he heard about the fire, Simon thought it was Daniel. Because he knew some dark stories about Daniel. He wasn't the only one. As police continue their investigation, Simon Manners becomes a valuable source of information. He knows the family dynamics. He's been around, and he tells police that at first, Daniel seemed like a normal, friendly kid. But over time, things started to change. Daniel began isolating himself in his room. He became obsessed with horror movies and violent video games. And as Simon tells police now, or more, I should say, the picture of Daniel becomes darker and darker. Simon recalls one moment right before they moved houses, when he was helping Daniel pack up his room, and what Simon found inside Daniel's room, it was disturbing. Inside Daniel's belongings, Simon found bags of Jackie's underwear, a bowl of Star Wars action figures that had been hacked up and urinated on. That's the moment when Simon first noticed all the horror movie tapes in Daniel's room, his growing collection. And then there was something even more unsettling. One day, Simon was changing his clothes in the bedroom, and out of the corner of his eye, he noticed something. Daniel was filming him with a video camera. Simon confronted him, "What are you doing?" But Daniel just shrugged it off. It seemed odd, but not necessarily dangerous. And then there were the neighbors. They started noticing odd behavior from Daniel, too. Daniel would climb into other people's yards and gardens. He wouldn't necessarily damage anything, he would just hang out there. But you know what's tough? At the time, these things didn't necessarily scream murderer. They screamed trouble kid. Maybe a weird kid, but not necessarily a killer. And that's what makes cases like this so hard. When do you step in? When do you realize that something is truly dangerous? Because how do you know if a kid is just being moody, or if something is really wrong? But looking back, like most people do, the signs were definitely there. Because it didn't stop at the odd behaviors. Daniel started having violent outbursts at school. In May 2010, when Daniel was 13, he had a disturbing episode in class. He started shouting at his school tie, referring to it as Fred. And not just that, he was screaming that the tie was trying to strangle him. His classmates and teachers were shocked. The school immediately referred him to a counselor after the incident. When Daniel met with the counselor, he confessed something chilling. He said he was hearing voices. He was feeling depressed. He said he was angry and having nightmares. And worst of all, he said the voices were telling him to hurt people. So at this point, Daniel was literally asking for help. And to be fair, he did go to counseling. But it's unclear how long he actually stayed in therapy. At home, Daniel's behavior was getting worse and worse. He started having violent fights with his mom, Jackie. Jackie's boyfriend, Simon, witnessed it firsthand. He told police that he actually had to step in to physically defend Jackie during some of these fights. Daniel would lash out at her, and Jackie didn't always stand up for herself. Simon later admitted, "There was a weakness on Jackie's part to stand up to her son. There was probably a bit of a hole in the parenting." But at the same time, Simon didn't feel like it was his place to discipline her kids. Daniel also began damaging things around the house. He was destroying the garden, intentionally tracking paint through the house after the floors were painted. And most disturbingly, Daniel started hitting his younger brother, Dominic. At this point, Daniel was also writing graphic, violent stories. Not just writing them, he was proudly showing them to his family. Daniel's behavior wasn't just violent, it was disturbing. At one point, he actually started urinating and defecating in his own bedroom. He would use towels to clean up the mess, and then he would hide the towels instead of going to the bathroom. But the thing is, by the time Jackie tried to discipline Daniel, he was already stronger than her. Things were spiraling out of control. Within a couple of days of Jackie's murder, police are searching Daniel's computer. They recover his Google search history, and what they find is disturbing. Some of his searches include people who get away with murder in shows, man kills wife and makes it, how to get away with murder. But the worst discovery? Police find a deleted file on his computer, a file that Daniel had deleted just days before the murder. With some work, forensic analysis retrieve it, and what they find? It's a story, a script, written before Jackie's murder. And in that script, Daniel wrote about a boy named Daniel Bartlett, who kills his mother Jackie. fictional story describes the exact murder scenario that had just happened in real life. The murder in the script is identical to what happened to Jackie. And in the story, Daniel successfully makes up a fake story about a masked intruder, he rescues his little brother, and he gets away with it. Even worse, Daniel's fictional version of himself goes on to become a famous soap opera. The entire story is about a boy who kills his mom and gets away with it. And that's when police know for certain Daniel planned this attack. Murder. It wasn't just an impulsive attack. With all the evidence piling up, police arrest Daniel Bartlam just 2 days after the murder. They have the claw hammer hidden in his room, which was the actual murder weapon, his violent stories and drawings, his internet search history, which included how to get away with murder, and his own pre-written script describing the exact murder of his mother. At this point, police confront Daniel with the overwhelming evidence, and his response? At first, he sticks to his story about the masked intruder, but as police continue questioning him, he finally changes his story. Daniel admits there was no masked intruder. He says that he and his mother got into an argument and that her abusive behavior forced him to kill her, which is completely different from what he originally told police at the crime scene when he said he and his mother had a good relationship. Now all of a sudden he's claiming he was a victim of abuse. Daniel paints himself as the victim, claiming that his mother was cruel to him, but everyone who knew Jackie, her family, friends, and even Simon completely contradict his story. They all say that Jackie lived for her children and that she was a loving mother. Daniel is officially charged with murder. At his sentencing on April 1st, 2012, the judge does not hold back. He tells Daniel, quote, "While there were arguments between you and your mother, not uncommon between teenagers and parents, there was no physical or verbal abuse by your mother, such as you alleged at trial." The judge completely rejects Daniel's claim that he was an abused child. Then he sentences Daniel to life in prison, with a minimum of 16 years before he's eligible for parole. Daniel is just 15 years old at the time of sentencing. After Daniel's sentencing, the most heartbreaking moment comes from Jackie's youngest son, Dominic, who is only 6 years old. Dominic leaves flowers and a poem at their old house in memory of his mother, because Daniel killed their mom. How do you even begin to process something like that when you're 6 years old? To this day, the biggest question remains why. Why did Daniel Bartlam kill his mother? The lead detective on the case summed it up perfectly, quote, "The level of violence, the degree of planning, and the extent of his lies is not only shocking, but also chilling, that a boy of 14 years old could do this. This murder has devastated everyone involved. There is only one person who knows why it happened, and that is Daniel. He has lied consistently throughout this case, and he has attempted to destroy his mother's reputation. Everyone who knew Jackie knew she lived for her children and was a warm, loving mother. Maybe one day Daniel will tell the truth, but as of today, there are still gaps that only he can fill." Motive? There is no motive. Daniel has never explained why he did it. He has shown no remorse, and maybe he's just a psychopath. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section below on this case. Give me your theories on why he did it. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Give me a thumbs up if you like your video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And we'll see you in the next one.